Okay, good morning everybody, and we'll start. Dalia, you asked a very good question at the end last time to understand how we were talking about how Moshe Rabbeinu set up and took down the Mishkan for these 7 days that were leading to the 8th day, Yom HaShmini, which is the name of our Parsha, Parsha Shmini. And we mentioned how Moshe Rabbeinu set up the Mishkan every day, took it down for the 7 days leading up to Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And the interesting thing is that the Mishkan is not just a small little, one-handed tent. It's quite an elaborate structure. So there's actually a lot of discussion about it. If Moshe Rabbeinu did it on his own, or was he assisted by a whole team, which would make logical sense. There is an opinion that there was a miracle that happened. In those 7 days, Moshe Rabbeinu somehow did it on his own, but he wasn't really doing it. He sort of picked up the planks, which nobody could pick up on their own. They were too heavy. But as soon as he sort of put his hand to it, Hashem made it stand sturdy, so to speak. And this was done on purpose, because to show, with like a few lessons there, first of all, to show everybody that obviously the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, but much more than that, that the Mishkan, the tabernacle, is a miraculous structure. But even deeper than that, it's actually a lesson for all of us in our life that we have to build a Mishkan inside of ourselves, and we have to do our bit. And even though a lot of times it seems insurmountable and so heavy and so big, we just start, put our hand to the wall, and Hashem will do the rest. And that was one of the reasons why Hashem made that miracle, which was quite amazing. But it was about, I looked it up, it was 30 amos long and 10 amos in the width, which was, it says it's about 13 or 14 meters in the length and about, 15 meters in the width. It's not massive, but it's not small. And the main thing is not only about the size, but about the weight of the beams and the walls and the curtains and the whole thing. And there's other opinions that Moshe Rabbeinu actually only did a small part of it, but that was what was called the Mishkan, which are the curtains. And they are what we refer to as the Mishkan, and the other parts, the other Kahanim and Levim did do. So yeah, it was interesting discussion, which I'm sure has its own shear to understand how it actually practically worked. Okay, but today we will move on with our psukim that we were analyzing quite in depth, and I feel so bad, I'm trying to like get a bit organized, and I'm not so organized, so we'll try to do the best we can with, I don't want to miss out, there are so many beautiful, beautiful ideas that come through today, so we'll do the best we can, and like I said, I always feel so bad that we're not in person, you can't ask questions in the middle, but what could I do, because when once I share the screen, I can't even see your faces anymore. Never mind hear you, but what we'll do is we're going to analyze today a few of the points that we started to touch on last week, and we left as questions, and we'll develop a little bit more, a few more beautiful ideas today as well. So last week we discussed how this was the most incredible special day, the holiest day, they were anticipating, they were waiting, it was like the peak, here's the Mishkan, 8th day, and Moshe Rabbeinu has trained Aaron, trained his sons, now they're doing the job themselves. And we mentioned that Moshe gives them specific commands, which animals to take for which sacrifices, all as a preparation for the holy fire to descend, for the Shechina to reveal itself, right? That's the idea. We want God's revelation. Not only would the Kehanim and Aaron be privileged to see this revelation, but the entire Jewish nation would be privileged to see the revelation of Hashem, so everybody was eager and excited. And as we mentioned last week, it didn't happen the first thing minute they woke up. It didn't happen as soon as they started the work. It took a little bit of time. That was done on purpose. I don't know if we said this last week, but the Alshech explains this was part of the training, if you want to say, the mind training and the emotional training in the midst of betachen, of trust, that we put effort, as we say all the time. You know, we have a very fascinating Maamar Chazal. We say, Hashem says to us, Pischuli kechudai shel machat, right? Open for me just like the eye of a needle. And Vaniyef tachlecha kepesach shel ulam. And I will open up like, you know, the doorway of a hall. You know, I will make it much, much bigger. Which we always say is we have to put a little bit of effort and Hashem, you know, you start the ball rolling and Hashem will do the rest. Hashem will help you. Many times in life, it doesn't seem that way. We put in effort, we put in effort, we put in effort, and it just doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And even though that is a perception, and the truth is that obviously Hashem is helping us, and there's obviously a plan, here on this 8th day of the Mishkan, even though it's one day, we know that one day can seem forever when you're excited. They woke up in the morning eager because this has been built up, and you know that this is going to be the day. And as they're starting their work and they're bringing Aaron and the sons are bringing these special karbanos, nothing happens. And that's what we're going to see unfold today. It seems as if nothing is happening. And the Jewish people and Aaron are becoming more and more disheartened, each from different points of view. But Aaron himself, and this is a very underlying thing, is racked with guilt. We mentioned this last week. Every time he saw the Mizbeach, to him it looked like an ox. It looked like the Chet HaEgel. You know, he looked as if he was staring his sin in the face. And Aaron felt riddled with guilt, and he thought it's his fault that nothing is happening. Maybe I am the one stopping the revelation of Hashem. The Jewish people also racked with their own personal guilt and maybe not feeling worthy enough. But as the day went on, they got a little bit more anxious, and then, we'll see, Hashem did appear. The idea being, the Al-Sheikh says, that in life we just have to keep on going. It doesn't happen at our pace. It happens at Hashem's pace. We don't always know when everything will fall into place, and we don't always understand how. But we have to just keep on going, doing what we are meant to be doing. And in this few psukim also, there's a very big lesson. How do we know what we're meant to be doing? So this is a very key thing that comes underneath it all. Just do as Hashem commands. So follow the rules, so to speak. The rules that were dictated. Whatever Moshe says, you do. Whatever the mitzvah says, you do. You don't feel it, you don't understand it, it's not achieving, you just keep doing. This is a very underlying theme, but I'd like now to start with, so I'm going to share the screen now, we're going to start with understanding, as we mentioned last week, we highlighted that when, in the psukim, we highlight, I just want to see, I'll show you in the psukim, just quick. We've read these psukim, I just want to quickly reread a few words just to get us into that perspective. And I'm so sorry, I don't know why these lines happen on the scan. It's not on my sheet. I haven't figured out why, but we'll try our best. So it says, look in Pasuk Beis, it says, Vayemer el Aaron, kach lecha. Remember we mentioned? Kach lecha egel ben bakar. Take yourself. And we said the word lecha is extra. Obviously, it's signifying something about it being specific to Aaron. And that's part of what we'll come to now. And then it says, Vel b'nei Yisrael tedaber leimer, Chusir izim lechatas ve'egel v'cheves. And then we said, what do they take? So they take a seir izim as a chatas. But which thing do they use? The egel. The egel, as we know, is symbolic of the sin of the golden calf. That is for the korban oila. Okay, Aaron brings the egel for the chatas. We mentioned this last week, and we have to develop why. So Aaron is bringing an egel, which as we know is a calf, for a korban chatas. Usually, the Kohen Gadol does not bring an egel for a chatas, he brings a par. That's why it's unusual. He doesn't usually. So this is something different. Obviously, it's significant. With the Jewish people, however, they bring a seir izim as a chatas, and we'll see why a seir izim as a chatas, which is, as we can see here, a he-goat. That's what they bring as a chatas. And what do they bring? The egel as an oila. Now, we mentioned when we did the introduction in Vayikra that there's obviously a few different types of karbanis. The karban chatas is brought for a sin, as a sin offering that you bring when you've made a mistake, when you've done a sin unintentionally. An oila, it's not a sin offering. An oila can be brought for many reasons. But if somebody brings an oila as an offering because they want to attain atonement, it's usually because the sin encompassed a tremendous amount. Thought, speech, and action. That's represented by the fact that the oila is totally burned up to Hashem. Which means you feel that you should be on that altar going totally up to Hashem. You have to cleanse yourself in all aspects of yourself. So an oila would show, in a sense, a deeper level of a feeling of a deeper level of sin, a deeper distance that needs repair. Okay, so we're going to analyze why the specifics. Just one beautiful thing on these words, and then we're going to go into the Mefarshim on those specifics. Do you see it says that Ve'el B'nei Yisrael Tidaber Leimar? It's a bit of a double lashon. Speak, saying. Why tidaber lemer? So the Arachayim HaKadosh says a very beautiful thing. He says, the word tidaber we know is always a much harsher, a much stronger speaking, and lemer is amar, is softer. So the reason that you are able to speak, this is the message Hashem is actually giving Aaron, really. The reason you're able to speak to the Jewish people, the reason you're able to communicate, the reason you're able to be in your position is only in the merit of the Jewish people. And therefore, you can speak to them in a way which is speaking from your heart in a strong way, which means that you feel with a strong conviction, lamer the softness, the love, the b'schus, the merit that you have to be able to communicate to them and therefore to communicate to Hashem, and you thank them for that. That's one very interesting thing. Another thing is also that tidaber lamer, and what was it that he has to say to them? He has to say to them strongly, k'hu se'ir izin, take for yourselves a, you know, this goat, this he-goat, and then also the eigel. Why does he have to speak to them so strongly? Very interesting, because at first, in the pasuk before that, it says Aaron should take. In this pasuk, it says the Jewish people should take. First, Aaron has to be cleared that his sin, and we'll see what his sin was and how minimal it was. After that, he can approach the Jewish people and confront them with what they have done wrong. So you see, sort of, it goes in a certain order where first Aaron has to vindicate himself. I'm not so guilty. He's not vindicating. Hashem is showing that he's really not guilty. And once he has that, he can come to the Bnei Yisrael and say clearly, okay, now it's time for you to do tshuva. There's one question I'm going to leave hanging for a little bit. That's a very interesting one, because here again, the contrast is quite strong in what's happening. We mentioned that this is the holiest and most precious and happiest and joyous day, a day of such simcha, as we said, 10 crowns. And yet, what's the first thing that they're confronted with? Their sins. It's like, can't you do it on a different day? Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu make them do tshuva the day before, another time? Why here, on the happiest, most joyous moment, all of a sudden here they are, and that's when they have to deal with all this, so to speak, shame. And that's what's underlying a lot of it, is a very deep feeling of shame. As we see from Aaron, he's very hesitant, and that's why Moshe Rabbeinu has to keep on encouraging him. And even the Jewish people feel that sense of shame, and it seems that not only do they feel it, but they're being, it's almost like it's being emphasized by Moshe Rabbeinu, by Hashem in that sense, by these karbanos. So why is that happening? And that's also hinted to in the first word, as we mentioned, Vayihi Lashon Tsar. There is an element of pain, even in this tremendous day of joy. So we have to understand, what's this combination? How does this work? Okay, but let's, as we said before, let's see now to see these karbanos. Just want to see a kliyakar and a arachayim, just to understand what's happening here with the sins. I'm just going to scroll down the psukim and we'll get to the mefarshim. Okay. So just here's the arachayim. I think I can move this. Not that way. Ah, beautiful. Because we're only going to do this one. Very good. Okay, very good. Okay. So here we are. This is Arachayim. It's Pasuk based, Arachayim, on the words Kach Lecha. So we're telling Aaron to take for himself, which shows that this was something that Aaron had to do as a special service that he had to atone for. So the Arachayim HaKadosh, it's Pasuk based, and the Divrei Hamaskel is Kach Lecha. So Arachayim says, Oid Nira Leimar, Ki Oimrei Lecha, that it says you, like you have to take it for yourself. Ki Zeyye Lecha L'Ais Oilam, this will be a sign for you. Ki Lai Asa Hu HaEgel B'Kavana, that Aaron didn't do the Egel, the sin of the golden calf, with any negative intention, chas v'shalom. V'loita acharav, and obviously he wasn't having any mistakes and thinking that this is actually a god. Elo sheba al yodai b'loi kavana. It did happen through him without any intention, u'b'loi machshav ara, and without any negative thoughts. V'letzad ze yoyel lechaper be'egel, and that's why he's able to, and there is a possibility for him to get a kapara of forgiveness for the egel, masha ein ken Yisrael, which is not the case with the Jewish people, letzad shema'aseyem be'egel hu b'chinas hamezid, because those who actually sinned, those that element of the Jewish people who did do the sin, they did it on purpose. That's why they were killed then with the different methods as we discussed then. The ones who were left behind, obviously, they might have been part of it, but they weren't actually sinning the way those Jews who had done that actual serving of the egel. But he says, "V'lo yavei ha'egel l'chatas lahem." So the egel cannot come as a carbon chatas. V'hu adrabe kategar. And even for the remaining Jewish people, it would be actually a terrible thing. It would be the one who is out to get them, the kategar, right? The advocate, the one who's against them, the lawyer who works against you, and that would be a negative thing. The timtza shehivkid Hashem al aren leval yikanes lebeis Hashem pnima b'yoyim hakipurim b'bigdei zahav letzad she'asa ha'egel zahav. And we know one also beautiful thing, a fascinating thing, that Aaron on or all the Kohanim Gedolim on the day of Yom Kippur, they didn't wear their magnificent golden clothes when they went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They had specific white garments made for them. Why? Because in Kategar Nase Sanegar, right? You don't have the thing that actually sinned to be there when you're trying to achieve atonement. And therefore you don't take the gold, which will remind you of the golden calf, into the Holy of Holies. Interesting here though, what is Aaron using as his carbon chatas? He is using an egel, which is interesting. Why does he want to remind Hashem about the egel when he's bringing the korban chatas, which is going to atone for the egel? So he says, "V'yesh l'hayir bezalot l'mashet l'matziv Hashem sheyove egel ben bakar l'chatas." Why does Hashem command him to bring this calf, this as a chatas? V'halaya chatas bela kapara. V'ein l'chasan egar ba'ilam kazeh. Right? How could it be? This is going to provide atonement. And this, in a sense, is almost the worst thing. This is like the worst witness against him. Because Hashem judged it righteously. And Hashem knows the intention of what Aaron was at, what was going on when they did the sin of the golden calf, and the role that Aaron played. Because Aaron really didn't do anything. Any action, anything negative, really, when it came to the egel, ki light yarei v'lahechina, right? He didn't actually form it, he didn't prepare it. Ve'inat zarech lemer shalayhemin, but he definitely didn't believe in it. V'light ta'achar of chas v'shalom, and he didn't follow it mistakenly. He didn't attribute any godly power to it. Ka'amr l'Moshe, as he said, v'yetz, right? When Moshe Rabbeinu confronted him, he said, "I just threw in this piece," and v'yetz ya egel, and out came the egel. Peirush me'atz me'yotza, it came out by itself. Right, we know that how it was done. There's different opinions. One of the opinions is that there were two magicians from the Erev Rav, and it gives the name over here, Yenus v'Yumvrus, and they somehow achieved that this piece of gold, out came this golden calf. I had nothing to do with it. I just threw it in. So the only thing that he did do has to do with the gold aspect. Why? Because what did Aaron actively do? The only one thing that he actively did, lemi zahav. He said to the people, "Who has gold? His parko, right? Take it off and bring it to me." That he did actively do. So he encouraged them to bring their gold to him. The rest of it, he was a passive, so to speak, it happened through him, but he didn't actively do anything. The lokach miyadam, and he took it from them, the yotzer oise becheret, umayse zeh asahu biyediya shlema. This he did with full knowledge, and we know why did he do it. He did it for a few reasons. What was his logic in telling them to remove their golden jewelry and bring it to him? One reason was because he was afraid of the Jewish people, that they shouldn't kill him like they killed Chor, and we're going to discuss that again soon. Chor will come in again in a minute, but we know that they killed Chor because Chor tried to stop them from doing the sin. So Aaron said, "I better not try to stop them, I better try to find a delay tactic." Gam haya ma'abed lahem hazman, and that's what the Aruch Chaim continues. He was actually trying to delay and to push off the time, atchi yavei Moshe, so hopefully Moshe would come before they can actually do anything. But nevertheless, this was an action which was a negative action, encouraging them to bring their gold. That's why Hashem says, let this eagle, this calf, come to forgive for this matter. That happened through him without any negative intention. So the only aspect, as we said, was the gold that was taki, like, had an intentional aspect to it. So therefore, Amar Hashem, lo yira bay lifnai v'lifnim, let him not be seen with the gold in the inner chambers, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, shelo yase kategar sanegar, because a kategar cannot become a sanegar, right? So you can't have somebody on the defense, the advocate can't become the defense, it doesn't work that way, right? So therefore, the actual gold cannot come in. But the egel is not considered a kategor for Aaron. Realize, it's a very interesting thing. Because when Aaron threw that piece of gold into the fire, he had no intention that an egel would come out. He had nothing to do with making it as an egel. So when it came out, it was an unintentional sin. It happened through him, but it was totally unintentional without any active part. Therefore now, to provide atonement for that aspect, he can bring a korban chatas, a sin offering of an egel. Aaron can, because he wasn't actively involved in forming the egel. But what can't he do? He can't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the gold clothes, because that he actually asked them to bring. Bring me your golden jewelry. But it's interesting, because the Aruch Chaim asks, that's all fine and good. But we know that he serves in the Mishkan and then later in the Beis Hamikdash with the golden clothes a whole year round, right? And he's bringing all these different sacrifices and providing atonement. Why? Why? Maybe they shouldn't have gold at all in the Beis Hamikdash. Maybe he shouldn't be wearing gold at all. So we say that there's a difference between the Holy of Holies and the rest of the Beis Hamikdash. Because in the Holy of Holies, the atonement that you achieve is on a very high and deep level. For that atonement, you cannot bring in the gold. But when it comes to the rest of the area of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan, in that area you only gain a much lesser level of atonement. And for there, the gold is fine. It won't disturb the atonement that's achieved by Aaron for Aaron himself. Because even though we're saying that Aaron had an active part with the gold, it didn't mean bad. Obviously the whole point was, as we said, a delay tactic. So it wasn't intentional either, even though he did say it. So therefore, out of the Kodesh Kodashim, out of the Holy of Holies, the gold is still okay. But entering into the Holy of Holies, no gold permitted. But over here we see something beautiful, that when we come to the day of the setting up of the Mishkan, and we want Aaron to be completely pure, as we say, completely cleansed, not even a drop of a taint of anything, what do? We tell him to bring an egel. And he brings the egel, and it becomes his korban chatas, showing that Aaron didn't do any of this sin intentionally. That's the first part. But then, when you talk about the Jewish people, what do they bring? They bring, as we said, the egel as a korban oila. Why? Because they did have a little bit of intention, a lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And they said, this is our God. And they thought that this was going to replace Moshe, whatever it was that they thought. They had negative thoughts as well. It wasn't just in their hands. It wasn't just external. It was an internal sin. And therefore, for them, the egel had to be brought as a korban, not chatas, it wasn't unintentional, but as a korban oila. And that's where you see the difference between Aaron and the Jewish people. And it's being highlighted here because he's going to represent them. So for them, it gives them back their confidence almost, that they feel that he can represent them and that Hashem will provide atonement even through Aaron, even though he played a role seemingly in the whole situation with the golden calf. But again, very important is that they're all going to be atoned different ways, different measures needed, depending on what they did wrong. And this would provide a clear path for them to be able to get the revelation of Hashem. I just want to see, there was one more that explains here. the Kliyaka, and this will lead us to another beautiful idea that this also represents. Just one second, before we do the Kliyaka, I just want to see, because I had something else I want to just do orally. Okay. About it, yeah. Okay, yeah, so the Rabbeinu Bechaya says also, I'll just read you, this is exactly what we said, but the Rabbeinu Bechaya says to Ir Izim, that the Jewish people, that they brought two karbat, we said two different animals. One was a Seir Izim, the he-goat, and one, as we saw, that's what the Jewish people brought as the chatas, but Aaron brought, as we saw, the eagle as the chatas. So the Rabbeinu Bechaya says, ki Aaron chata b'maise, v'loy b'machshava, Aaron sinned with action, not with thought. And for the Jewish people, he commanded that it should be the egel, the calf. What should that be? As an oila, lefisha ha'oila ba'al hirur ha'leiv. Because when you bring a carbon oila, that comes for the thoughts in the heart. V'yadua ki Yisrael choshvu bay machshava ra. And it's known that the Jewish people had negative intention when it came to the golden calf. Okay. So let's just see what's going to happen. I just want to show you something very beautiful here. We're going to have another interesting thing that's introduced, and it's even going to make our question even stronger. We asked originally, why bring up sins on this special day? And we're going to even see that this is not enough. Not only do we bring up the Chet Egel, but we're going to bring up another sin. Let's see what it says. So here the Kliyakar says, Khu Seir Izim Lechatas. See, this is from the Kliyakar. I think it's Pasuk Gimel in the Kliyakar. And it says, take for yourselves a Seir Izim. Remember we said a he-goat as a chatas. That's the chatas that the Jewish people bring. So they bring the egel as a oila, but they also bring a carbon chatas. What is their carbon chatas? A Seir Izim. Why are they bringing a Seir Izim, a he-goat, as the sin offering? Where does that come in? Another sin. So let's see what he says. Likabar. Okay, so first it's a kapara, he says. But let's see, I will go here because I want to see he's going to bring from a medrash. Ubatayras kahanim. Darshu. Ma ra'u Yisrael lahavi yoser min Aaron. Why do Jewish people have to bring more than Aaron? Ela amar lahem maisha atem yesh biyetchem mitchila v'yesh biyadchem misayf. Very powerful medrash. You have on your hands, which means you are guilty from something from the beginning and from something from the end. You have lots of guilt in your hands. And what is it? And it started way before the sin of the golden calf. Bitchila shenemar. What's the first one at the beginning? This goes all the way back to the sin of Yosef. When they took Yosef and what they did to him, and what did they do? And part of the process of what they did to Yosef was after they got rid of him, we know the pasuk says, "Vayishchetu seirizim," and they slaughtered a he goat. Why? In order to bring that blood, you know, they put the blood on the tunic and they brought it to Yaakov. So, oh my gosh, here we are again, putting in context, Yom Hashmini, the day, and what are the Jewish people reminded of? And feel so guilty and feel so low and feel so full of shame. And not only do they feel it, but they actively have to do something to provide atonement. It goes all the way back to the sin of Yosef, of the brothers and Yosef. And that's what he says, Besayf Shenema, and what's this last sin? Asulahem Egel Masecha, right? That you did the Chet Egel, the sin of the golden calf. Yavai Seir, V'yichapra Maise Seir. So let the goat come and provide atonement for the action that they did with the goat. Yavai egel v'yechaper al maise egel. Okay, so now you're going to bring an egel, a calf, and that will atone for the action of the calf. Aval Aaron lo haya lo chele ki im be'egel. But Aaron had no portion, only in the egel. That's why he has a much less carbon than they did. They had extra parts to their carbon, which Aaron didn't have. But the Kliyakar goes off on an interesting question. And we'll just do this quickly because then we're going to develop another interesting thought about the connection between, we have to understand this poses such a fascinating thing. First of all, why bring this all up now? And what is the connection between the sin of Yosef and the sin of the golden calf, and now setting up the Mishkan. I mean, this seems to be like he's almost picking out of a hat all the terrible things. It's like, you know, sometimes when we talk to somebody and we're not happy with them, we bring up many things that they've done wrong, but that's because we're people and it has no connection. But if Hashem is doing it, there must be a connection. There must be something deeper going on here. And we have to understand what's going on here. So here the Kliyakar first has just an interesting detail. He says, V'yesh l'daptek, lama haitzias Aaron miklal maisa disirizim. Why is Aaron being removed? We're saying that Aaron has no part in that sin of the goat, which was to do with Yosef and the brothers. V'haloi gam Levi haya b'maisahu. Levi was in that story, we know that. He played quite a big role in that story. Right? We know that he had a bigger part than all the rest of the brothers. It was Shimon and Levi who were the ones who really were encouraging the brothers to actually kill Yosef. Right? We know that. They were the ones who played the biggest role in the story of Yosef. So why is Aaron all of a sudden exempt, so to speak, and not part of this? And he's asking, why does the Medrash use this language, the beginning, the end? Rather, should have said, you have two sins. It sounds like he's literally connecting both sins, as if one sin caused the other. One came first, and that caused the other one to come afterwards. Right? What's the concept? What's the connection between the atonement for the sin of, as we said, the goat with Yosef, and the atonement for the sin of the Egel? Gam pasuk v'yikrivu kol ha'edah v'yamdu lefnei Hashem. We said the entire Bnei Yisrael came close and they stood before Hashem. Where does that come in? Tzorich bir ki lo pirish bay l'heichan karver. Doesn't tell us where they came close to. U'mahav sh'amar zeh hadav rasher tziva Hashem tasu. This is the thing that Hashem commanded you. That's what you should do. Mayasu. It doesn't say clearly what they should do. Oid noisef ha'mashe kfar asu. In addition to what they've already done. So there's a lot of different detailed questions that the Kliyakar is asking on the psukim. And let's see his main thrust of what he tells us. V'akorev elai loymar. Beheter sveikes elu. So what it sounds to me, what's close to me, which will take away, which will alleviate a lot of these different doubts and questions and difficulties. Shebal medrash zesayver shahu shaha baha talia. That the one who said the medrash actually believes that one is dependent on the other. Sheoysay maise shel vayishchetu sirizim. When they slaughtered that goat, when they sold Yosef, Hayasiba gam b'maisa egel, that was the original cause for them doing the golden calf afterwards. Why? Ya'an ki meheyadua shem midas hakina shahoysa b'ache Yosef garma lahem oysay maise shel vayishchetu sir izin. What was it that caused them to sell Yosef and then to have to slaughter this goat and to bring this as a, you know, proof that Yosef is dead to their father? What was the motive? What was the underlying problem? Jealousy. Kina. They were jealous of Yosef. And this is what aided them, this jealousy that Yaakov favored Yosef, and they thought Yosef was going to be the chosen one, the leader, and therefore, as we know, that jealousy aided them. This is on a very simple level. We'll discuss soon a little bit deeper. But that's what caused that original sin. And then we go on and we say, U'me'oz nishtar shira b'soicha midas hakina. Interesting. They obviously had jealousy, but once they acted on the jealousy, and this is a very fascinating thing in life, a person can have a certain character trait, but until they actively do something with it, until they do it, it's not rooted in them. It's just a potential of their personality. Once they actively did this, by treating Yosef in this cruel way, now it became rooted. And now it became actually extremely a very strong part of their personality. So it's interesting. It's a very fascinating idea. And then what does that lead to? Unfortunately, then we see what happens. Let's see. L'dayres for generations. K'maysha ne'emar ki kinas beischa achal sani. Right? That the jealousy of your household is what consumed me. And as we know, the jealousy literally consumes and takes over and destroys. He kinas beis Yisrael, hamitzuya ben Yisrael, b'chol ha'dayres, yoyser mi b'chol ha'umais. Interesting language that it seems that jealousy is found amongst the Jewish people even more than amongst other nations. The eagle came out. Why? From what? Where did the eagle come? The calf, the golden calf. Sherabim kanu b'Moshe. That many people were jealous of Moshe Rabbeinu b'machane in the camp. Kairach v'adasa, like Kairach and his the whole whole following. V'chein ba'isay zman rabim knaim pagu by many of the jealous people were very upset, and they were the ones who attacked and tried very hard to undermine the Zais Tairas HaKinais. This is the whole story of the jealousy. Lachshayv Alav Alilais Tvarim. First of all, you think negative things about the person, you make up lies. Leimer Kizem Aisha Ish, Lo Yadano Mehaya Loi, right? We don't know what happened to him. Where was it rooted? Because they really wanted Moshe not to come back. They wanted him to disappear. They didn't want him to be the leader because they were jealous of him. This is what the Kliyokar says. And therefore, from that jealousy, it led to them actually believing that he's not coming back. And then they made this golden calf. Kidei Lifrek Ayla Me'alem, so that they can remove his yoke from upon them. V'limnoi Salem Ha'egel Hazeh. Right, so they can appoint this Egel. We know Egel doesn't really do anything. That they can accept as a leader because they don't have to leave room for anything. We know what that represents. That represents when people are willing to accept something officially to be their guide, but it's really them. It's themselves. It's somebody they can manipulate. That's what they want. They only want something they can manipulate. They don't want a true leader that they have to actually listen to. And they didn't want Moshe Rabbeinu. What does jealousy do? It causes a terrible separation in the hearts. This is what stood by them, and this is what made them, unfortunately, have this terrible, terrible separation, this terrible lack of achdus, this lack of unity amongst them. And that's, just see where I lost my place. Yes. Kibotlu mitzvah v'afta l'reacha kamaycha. And then we know, obviously, what happens then is that there's no love between themselves. Zoachet ha'kodem ha'misaviv gam ha'meuchar. This is the first sin, and this is causes the last sin. Shelesoif ponu oirev gam el Hashem. First, they have hatred between themselves with Yosef. That causes a terrible rooting of jealousy. Then they're jealous of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that ultimately leads to that not only do they hate each other, but they hate Hashem in that sense. Not hate, but they have this feeling that they cannot have any authority over them. There's no God. And we know that the Baal Shem Tov says very, very strongly that Avas Hashem and Avas Yisrael go together. It's not possible to have one without the other. You cannot have love of God without love of his people. And you can't have love of the Jewish people without love of God. It goes, they only work together. And we see that over here. One causes the other. One lack causes the lack of the other. I just want to see, to finish the concept that he brings. Right, as we said. And then, very interesting. So the Chazal tell us, when there's peace amongst the Jewish people, Hashem says, Leave them. I'm not going to get angry at them very, very quickly, right? Why? Because they're going to fix up all their problems. Interesting. We would think that first should be love of Hashem, and leading from that will come love of the Jewish people. But you see over here something very powerful. What was the cause of the Chet HaEgel? What came first? First came the sin of Yosef. First came the disunity between people, between one brother and another brother. That led to the lack of ability to accept Hashem as the ruler. Moshe Rabbeinu and then Hashem. So you see that it's first we have to have unity within ourselves, and only then can we have a true unity with us and Hashem. And that's what Hashem says. And he says he develops it in another one of his Sfarim. He didn't answer all of his questions, but these are some of his questions that he asked. So according to the Kli Yakar, we can see that there's two sins that are connected. He brings from the Medrash, and his connection is a very interesting one. He brings the connection based on the fact that the jealousy was what caused the sin of Yosef, and now the jealousy is what causes the sin of the golden calf. And we have to root all of this out, and only then are we ready to have the Mishkan. Remember, what's the Mishkan? The Mishkan is a revelation of godliness, which will come upon the Jewish people, where the Jewish people will be united in serving Hashem, all together, united in this most magnificent space where Hashem is revealed. That can only come when you root out all of these sins. We're going to see soon a little bit deeper why it's connected. But just before we go further, I'm going to share something with you, and then we'll read it inside. It's in very short. Just another aspect, and there's many ways that many Mefarshim analyze this, the connection between the sin of Yosef and the sin of the golden calf. Fascinating, because the Medrash puts them together. And he said, they say such a phenomenal thing. I saw a very, very beautiful idea here. So he said like this. So what happened with Yosef? Just to go back a drop, we know the story of Yosef. So they took Yosef's garment, the Pesukim tell us, and they slaughtered a he-goat. They immersed the garment in the blood, and they sent the colored garment and brought it to their father. And what did they say? They said to Yaakov, we found this. Now, right, what is it? Is it your son or is it the goat, right? So now we see that's where the he-goat comes in. That's what they're bringing now as a chatas. What was the problem? What was going on there? So when you analyze the story of Yosef and you think also, as we asked, why now? Why do they have to bring a chatas now, this special day? Haven't they already done tshuva? And we know that when the brothers were faced, you know, when they were confronted by Yosef, right? Remember we said even before they were actually confronted, when all the terrible things were happening to them in Egypt, right? When Yosef was accusing them of being a spy. Do you remember what they said to each other? They said, oh my gosh, this is all happening to us. Why? Because we mistreated our brother. Remember, those were the words they used. Because they acknowledged there that they had been cruel to Yosef. That was a very big part of it. They acknowledged their cruelty. Maybe we shouldn't have sold him. Not only that, but the way we did it. Maybe we shouldn't have ended in sensitivity. Remember, they sat down to have a meal. So what they acknowledged as far as their sin was the fact that they treated Yosef cruelly. But what they never acknowledged, and they never admitted yet, was the fact that the actual selling of Yosef was actually deeply wrong. Why? Why didn't they think it was wrong? What was their logic in selling Yosef? So we all know the famous story when you go all the way back, it's almost our parsha, coming closer to those parshas, we know what happens. When Yaakov favors Yosef, the brothers see this, that's fine. They think he's holy, whatever, very nice. They can accept that. But then we know what happened, that it says that Yosef saw all the things that the brothers were doing. He judged them unfavorably, whatever it was. They were doing things that he thought were wrong. And how did he deal with that? So we say, what did he do? He went to Yaakov and he brought dibosom ra, right? He spoke lashon hara, so to speak, on the brothers, right? He brought the negative talk. He told Yaakov all the negative things that he saw the brothers doing. The brothers felt that this was a terrible thing that Yosef did, because they felt that this, why is Yosef doing it? What's motivating Yosef? They felt that what Yosef is trying to do is trying to separate between them and Yaakov, that he should be the exclusive, if you want to say, son, and they should be sidelined. And he can be the exclusive son who will be the one to receive everything from Yaakov and be, if you want to say, like Yaakov was to Yitzchak and like Yitzchak was to Avraham. Now we have Yosef coming from Yaakov. Why did they feel that? What did they think Yosef should do if he sees them doing something wrong? So they said, if Yosef really sincerely cares and really cares about what we're doing, and his motive is not just to get favor in the eyes of his father, his motive is rather because he really cares and he wants us to change our ways, they said, you know what he should have done? Just come to us. Say, you are doing this wrong. And maybe then we would analyze, we would discuss, and we would realize, yeah, we're doing something wrong. Why doesn't he confront us directly? Why did he go to his father? So in their minds, they never ever thought that what they did, actually selling Yosef, was wrong. They thought just the way they sold Yosef was wrong. And because of that, they never did a proper tshuva. They did a tshuva only for the way they sold him, not for the actual selling. But now we come to something very interesting. When it came to the sin of the golden calf, and this is the connection between Yosef and the golden calf, now Moshe Rabbeinu says to them over here, which is not that long after the golden calf, stop and think for a moment. Do you think your only sin was the way you treated Yosef? Can you analyze now and see that your whole logic doesn't make sense? Why? Because let's see what happened at the golden calf. We all know. Who stood there in front of the Jewish people? Moshe Rabbeinu went up on the mountain. Who did he leave in charge? Aaron and Hur. Remember Hur, the son of Miriam, a big, big tzaddik. He left Hur to assist Aaron to lead the Jewish people. When the Jewish people came up with this idea of doing this golden calf, they approached Aaron and Hur. We know that, right? We learned that. And what did Hur do? Hur said, I can't let them do this. This is wrong. So he started to have a discussion with them and tried to persuade them. This is wrong. Did they agree with him? No. But the problem is, they didn't just disagree with him. They didn't say, like civilized people, you can hold one way, I can hold another way, but we can each have our own opinion. Or they didn't say to him, leave us alone and let us do what we want. Instead, what did they do? They killed him. We know this, unfortunately, nowadays quite prevalent. Somebody has a different opinion. Everybody's entitled to my opinion, right? That's the only thing. The only way, right? It's my way or the highway. This was the way it was. But it was even deeper than that. Not only could they not disagree, but they actually killed Hur. What happened when they killed Hur? What does it reflect? It already reflects something very deep. It shows that what Yosef did was right. Yosef saw this in them. Yosef said, if I will confront my brothers, I will be putting myself in danger. They don't have that strength of character to be able to accept criticism and look at it properly and reflect it and not react in such a terrible way. Yosef saw that in them. He was right. And how do we know he was right? They proved it by the Chet HaEgel. Now that they kill Hur, now Moshe Rabbeinu says, stop and reflect. Did Yosef have a choice? Could he have gone to you and said, you're doing such and such? No, you would have killed him. He had to go to his father. That's the only way he thought. Maybe he can hopefully get you to do tshuva. So now you better do tshuva, not only for the way you treated Yosef, but for the actual idea and sin that you thought that he was bringing Lashon Hara because he wanted to create a division between you and him. A very powerful idea. And this is the connection, as the Medrash says, one sin is very much the beginning and the other sin is the end, meaning it's one unit and it comes from one cause. A very powerful thing for us to reflect, as we know, in life, in order for us to grow and to change and to become better people, we do have to build up a certain inner strength to be able to take criticism in a way where we don't immediately put ourselves on the defensive. It's hard, very, very hard, but it's the only way we will ever grow. But definitely, one thing definitely, that we shouldn't shoot the messenger. We should be careful that if somebody tells us something, even if they're wrong, sometimes people get it wrong because they're only people. Doesn't matter. It's a messenger, as we say. Analyze. Maybe there's something in it. Maybe, yeah, maybe a different message, whatever it may be. But we have to be careful. But over here, you can see it's a very fascinating thing. And this is what the Medrash says. Now, no excuses. Now you need to bring a karban chatas for the sin that you have done with the Seir Izim. Because even though you thought maybe, that Yosef is doing it because of something, you know, bad, and he really wants to wash Nora, now you know he was right. So maybe it was unintentional, but you cannot say that he did a sin and that the only sin that you did was just in actually mistreating him, because the selling was totally off. Off was bad. Okay, so that's one thing. Then I want to go on to show you something very beautiful. Before time goes, I want to leave one more idea. And this is actually based on, in a very long way, the Meshech Chachma. I'll show you in number 10. Meshech Chachma, Meir Simcha Dvinsk, just lived just before the war. I think he passed away somewhere in the 1930s in, I do know where. I think it's in Lithuania or in Riga, I'm not sure, in one of those countries. A very, very great tzaddik, and he wrote on the Chumash. And so I'll show you in his words. B'teres kahanin, v'chimaro, so he's also quoting the Medrash, v'chimaro Yisrael lahavi yoser me'arein, ela amar lehem. Why did the Jewish people have to bring more, so to speak, karbonis than Aaron? Atem yesh lachem t'chila v'saif. You have a beginning and an end. Right at the beginning, the slaughtering of the calf, of the goat, as we said, with the brothers, and then asula, and then the other, the last sin is asulahem egel masecha. They made this egel. Yavai seir izim v'chaper al maisa izim. Let the goat provide atonement for the goat. Yavi Egel v'yichaper al ma'ase Egel. Peirush to al mechiras Yosef yesh ktsas ismalei. On the selling of Yosef, there was a little bit of an excuse. Mishum di Yosef loy haya loy lahavi di basam ra. That's how they always rationalized it to themselves. Why did they sell him? Because Yosef shouldn't have brought their negative talk to Yaakov. Rak haya loy loy chichan batzmam. He should have come himself directly and told them off. Aval achshav shechor shaychiach haysam hargu. But now, when Chor came to them and told them off, and how did they react? They killed him. Shuv nis'ayrer aleim chet mechiras Yosef. Now it comes up again, the sin of the selling of Yosef. She'enam mekablim teichacha. They are unable to receive criticism. This is a people which finds it extremely difficult to accept any form of criticism. But everybody finds it difficult, but obviously you don't kill the person who's telling it to you. And this is a very important message that we can see here. I just want to show you one beautiful thing here. We have and then there's still a little bit more that we'll finish off next week on this idea before we move on to further. But just want to show you something very beautiful about, as we kept on highlighting, and I'll just show you a few of the lines inside. We highlighted that, why is it that now, you know, here they're being confronted, never mind the sin of the golden calf, but the sin of Yosef, I mean, every sin possible. It is absolute shame. I mean, they're coming here with trepidation, right? You know, they've set up the Mishkan, put down the Mishkan 7 days. They've just experienced the sin of the golden calf, and now they're, so to speak, experiencing the atonement. Why are they confronted on this day, so to speak, with their shame, not only them, but Aaron also? So we have a very beautiful idea from the Nesivas Shalom. So the Nesivas Shalom says, Lama ata boish. Why are you, the language that's used is, why are you ashamed? Lekach nifcharta, right? This is also brought in, Rashi brings something similar. This is what you were chosen for, right? Moshe Rabbeinu says to Aaron, don't hesitate, right? He keeps on hesitating. He keeps on holding back. He keeps on being afraid. And Moshe says, don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed. This is what you were chosen for. So he's quoting from the Likutei Torah from the Reb Chaim Vital that he says, he's translating it as, why were you chosen for the kahuna? Mikol chavercha, from over all of your friends, over all of your colleagues. Mepnei she'ata boish. Because you have this midah, this attribute of shame. She'ata anav v'shavor b'kirbacha. Because you are humble and broken inside. U'midah zu ata gadol mikulam. And in this midah, you are greater than everybody else. That's why you are chosen. And he asks an interesting question. That's all very fine and good, but we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was considered the most humble person that ever lived, even more humble than Aaron. Moshe gets the prize of humility. What's unique about Aaron, and what are we emphasizing? Not so much humility as anivus, but we're emphasizing a different word here, busha, shame, right? And that's what we're, in a sense, that's what they're feeling. And this shame does make you feel humble. It makes you feel very broken inside. But there obviously is something unique about this busha, this shame that Aaron feels, and the Jewish people are made to feel here, that Aaron excels in, and the Jewish people are made to feel here, that is a prerequisite and a very important component of the service in the Mishkan. So let's see. I'll just skip and I'll show you here. Sheyesh beiz bechinas v'hashras hashchina mitoich anava u'busha. There's actually two levels, so to speak, in the resting of the Shechina, from humility and from shame. So he says, Yesha adam is batal ke'ayin ve'efes mitoich gadul sabayre. Sometimes a person feels, so to speak, totally nullified and like nothing. Why? Because of the greatness of Hashem. Sheroya es gadul sabayre, he sees how God is great. Shehu ein soif ve'ein tachlis, that he's infinite, he's unlimited. And because from that, noichach, like that's facing him, so oh, what faces him, what confronts him? His nothingness. And he feels himself as nothing. So from the greatness of Hashem, right, you see Hashem's revelation and you feel like nothing. That's one way that it happens. Another way that a person feels humble or broken is when they feel low in themselves. When he knows his sins and when he knows your own negative actions. umitoich shiflus atzmai nishbar libay bekirbay legamre. And from that aspect, because of his lowness, that he feels that he's not deserving and that he's done such and such, so inside he feels broken and he feels quite, obviously he's filled with a sense of shame and a sense of humility. And these two different approaches represent the way Moshe is and the way Aaron is. Moshe hayu b'dargas v'tmunas Hashem yavetz. Moshe was on the level that he actually saw the greatness of Hashem, right? He used to look directly at God. Shehisiges hamadrega helyena b'akaras gadzaberi, he could understand and grasp the greatest levels of godliness. And umitoich kach hayu ayin v'efes hamuchlot. And obviously that caused him to feel like nothing. Be'ini atzmei, in his own eyes. B'tachlus hanavan, ultimate humility. As we know, let's just see, but what does Aaron have? Aaron has the second level. Shivrin leiv mitaych shiflus atzmai. Why did he feel broken? Because he felt low. And this Hashem engineered. Shekach sivev HaKadosh Baruch Hu misavev asibais shechot chet ha'egal yiyal yidei Aaron. That Hashem engineered it. He made it all happen. He contrived it all. That it should happen that Aaron was the one that was active in the sin of the golden calf. Why? So Aaron should get to the highest level of a broken heart from a feeling of lowness. From the level of knowing Hashem, how great he is, and therefore that leads you to humility. That's where Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest. As we say, aval hamadrega hashniya, but the second level shalanava of humility, ubusha, and shame, shehi shivrein lev, which is a broken heart, mitaych shiflus atzma, because of this feeling of self-lowness, lazeh higir rak Aaron. This only Aaron came to, not Moshe, because Moshe didn't have that element of sin. Moshe was half man, half angel. So he didn't have that broken heart from a feeling of shame or from a feeling of lowness, if you want to say. So that's why he says, and this is actually a very deep thing. He says that Aaron had this, Aaron represented this, and therefore he had this, as he says, leiv nishbar v'nitka, which means shehu shavur u'mevuyash b'payal mitaych shiflusay, right? He was literally broken and literally shamed because he felt quite low. And he says, she'azali kin lo sivza, right? Until him it says, Hashem doesn't ever despise, it doesn't ever neglect somebody who has a broken heart. And dafke through him comes the bringing down of the Shechina through his bringing of the Karbanus. Because what is a Karban? Ruach Nishpura. A Karban, a sacrifice, is a broken heart. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to him. Why are you ashamed? That's why you were chosen. Sharak Aaron hayeba madregazu, only Aaron was on this level. Shahaya baish to shavar, that he was ashamed, that he was broken inside. Asher bazahaya hu yaisa mikulam, he was greater than everybody, even than Moshe. And that's why vayehi bayei mashmini. What is vayehi, we said? Loshen tsar, pain. What does that mean? Because it says, bir shatsar haya al kach she Moshe Rabbeinu loy haya lo yes shivin halev shal Aaron. Moshe didn't have the broken heart of Aaron. Why? Because he had no connection to sin. That's why the Shechina didn't come down on his karbanis, but only on Aaron. And this is something that, interestingly enough, Moshe himself is a little bit jealous of Aaron. He says, you can have a feeling of a broken heart more than me. And this is such a deep thing. And I want to show you something beautiful. This applies to all of us when we approach Hashem. I mean, we don't have the level of Moshe for sure. There's no question. We don't see the great revelation of godliness in such a real way. And that causes us to feel low. But what we do have, unfortunately, is we can reflect a little bit and see whatever mistakes we've made. It's not so hard for us to look a little bit and to feel broken by that. And he says, this is the same thing. This is what happens every single Shabbos. This is meant to happen. And we have both elements, a beautiful thing. Shabbos, we have both Moshe and Aaron, which represents Moshe, Yismach Moshe, b'matnas chelkai. We say it in Shabbos davening. Moshe Rabbeinu rejoiced in his portion, in the presence of his portion. What does that mean? That we know that Moshe, it's a very beautiful thing, Moshe and the Elef Nishmasin and thousands of souls, Yardin, come down on every Shabbos to return to the Jewish people The edya, remember we said, whatever that maybe represents, the jewelry, the crowns that we had on Har Sinai. On Shabbos, they are returned to us. And this edya, mehar chayiv hainu ha'asaga, on Shabbos, we are able to have a taste of Moshe. We do have more of a feeling of revelation of godliness. We feel more the light of Hashem on Shabbos. Godless habayrei, sheisigu behar chayiv. And on Shabbos, we are given a taste of that, of what the Jewish people were able to see at Har Sinai. We are given every single Shabbos. Sheniftachu kol zayin harakim, v'roa kol she'inayim mavada, right? All the seven heavens opened, and everybody was able to see that there's nothing except for Hashem. And then the Jewish people were able to reach the highest levels of understanding Hashem. And b'chol Shabbos kodesh mischadeshes b'chinas ha'izbatlus shel Moshe, habo mitoich hasagas gadlus haberi. So every Shabbos we can have that level of feeling of not brokenness, but more humility from the sense of the greatness of Hashem that we feel on Shabbos. But there's something else. V'chein yeshna b'Shabbos kodesh ha'b'china hashniya. We also have the second aspect. What does the Zohar tell us? Hofluch boishes v'tishachach Shabbos. The word Shabbos, if you switch around the letters, is also, we know when we say it has the letters of tshuva, but it also has the letters of boishes. Boishes, shame. What does this mean? So he says, take the shame and replace it with Shabbos. That's what we say. Well, how do we see something beautiful? The very interesting halacha, it's a play on words, but it's actually fascinating. It says in halacha, chayav adam lemashmesh bebigdai, that on Erev Shabbos, just before Shabbos, one of the halachas is a person supposed to check their pockets. Because if you have a coat, many times it happens, you didn't think it's going to rain, it rains, you take out your raincoat, and oh yeah, there's some money in there, right? What are you going to do? So really, on Erev Shabbos, you're supposed to check the pockets, so that won't happen, so there won't be anything muktzah in the pockets on Shabbos. That's the halacha. But I'll show you a little play on words. He says over here, so the halacha is lemashmesh bebigda, right? To feel in your clothing on Erev Shabbos, in chashecha, on Erev Shabbos, just before it gets dark. Amar Rav Yosef, hilchasa rabasi l'Shabbos, right? This is a very big halacha of Shabbos. What is bigdai? Miloshen begida. Begida, we know, ashamnu bagadnu, rebel. So instead of reading it as check your clothing, check all of your actions that you have done. Start to assess, think about, reflect. The past week, was there anything that you did that was against, so to speak, what Hashem wanted? Shechayev adam l'mashmesh bebegidusav, right? To check his thoughts, his things that he did that might have been rebelling. Kasher magia of Shabbos im chashecha, shazhu echad mizmaneich tshuva. That's one of the times of tshuva. And then Yehudi Oisa es cheshbeinai, and the person does his reflection and he makes his accounting of the whole week. And he says, boy, where do I find myself? And what have I done against Hashem? And then you're filled with shame, but that's just before Shabbos comes in. You, Hashem helps you. You take that shame because you've reflected, and now you're doing tshuva, and you switch it around, and comes Shabbos. Why? Ki lev nishbar v'nitke elekim lo sevazeh. Because a broken heart, Hashem never ever detests. He never despises. He always brings you close. V'hainu shekemoshi yesh derech l'hikanes l'shabbos al yidei yismach Moshe. So one way you enter Shabbos is with the joy. You have to have both, right? The present, the incredible thing that Shabbos is coming and we're going to get the most incredible revelations. We also enter Shabbos with Arim, that we draw down the Shekhinah through the broken heart, through the feeling of lowness. And this is a very powerful lesson to do with what we were saying. Why is it that on the day of the revelation of the Mishkan, Dafke, then we have to have that feeling? This is something that applies to us every single day. We sit down, we daven, we start our day in the morning. We have to realize that, yes, first of all, we have to realize that sometimes we do have to reflect, but even deeper, when we feel broken, this is a very beautiful thing, and a lot of times we do. When we stop and think, we try not to think, we try to, gloss a little bit. But sometimes it's inevitable that we are filled with certain guilt and certain shame for some of the things that we might have done. Even yesterday, said something, hurt somebody, whatever it may be. We see something so powerful here. We can take that shame and transform it. We can use that shame as a stepping stone to come literally into the Mishkan and get the revelation. That's what we'll do next week. Hashem actually reveals himself. When we come with that shame, with that broken heart. So instead of sometimes suppressing it or saying, no, I don't want to feel that, use it as a stepping stone. Obviously, the goal is to be filled with joy, right? As we say, a Jew is not meant to live in a sense of brokenness constantly, but the brokenness leads to something tremendous. So we can have both and never feel in a sense that that brokenness doesn't have a purpose. It has a tremendous purpose, and it plays a big role specifically on the day that the Mishkan is set up, every day when we set up our Mishkan. So that's just a very powerful aside. You can unmute yourself if you want to. Let's see if I can try to do for Daisy. Daisy, I don't know, could you try maybe to press unmute? I don't know if it has a thing. And then you can, if anybody has any questions.
Yes, I'm the only one with questions.
No, Leia, good.
You spoke about the Chet HaEgel and Yosef.
Yeah.
But the different generations.
I know. So that's a very big, you're right. So there's a whole thing on it. That's where we come to the whole thing about carrying the sins forward, because they didn't do a proper shuvah, as we said, right? Because they didn't recognize their mistake, right? That was the problem. They only did shuvah for the part that they wrecked, that they admitted that they did wrong. So then it carries forth. In a sense that collectively we have to look back and say, they didn't understand what they did wrong. Now we can fully understand, so we better do shuvah for them.
So all the even today, like if your children make a sin, we are
well, not necessarily responsible, but I think more the idea is that we can do tshuva. It's more the positive side of it, that you can rectify. It doesn't mean
necessarily kids.
Well, it goes more the other way, you know, the next generation. But yes, Leah, we do say, you know, there's a very beautiful thing. Like for example, if you do things, you know how you do things in honor, let's say, of an neshama who passed on, right? Yeah, there are things that we can do that definitely help for previous generations, especially if they didn't know they made a mistake, right? They didn't know. Now we reflect.
The generation above.
That's right. Yeah. So okay, we can.
That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
That's fine.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Sorry to ask so many questions.
Thank you. I wish we could do it in the middle. I hate this Zoom. I just want to close this one second.